Mathematical sense are timeless entities, and classes in biology are not timeless. Classes in biology have histories. They have a turnover in their instances. Classes, therefore, are not determined by their members, where every set is determined by its members, in a technical sense, which is easy to define. A class you can compare to a state or to an organism. A state can gain and lose citizens and yet remain the same. An organism can gain and lose molecules and yet remain the same. A biological class can gain and lose instances and yet remain the same. A set is determined by its members. It can't gain or lose members. And that generates a completely different system of axioms for classes than those axioms that we're familiar with from set theory. When people talk about giving semantics to biomedical information resources, they usually mean providing set theoretic models. Now, if biomedicine is not dealing with sets, but rather with classes, then it may be that we need to find different sorts of models from the ones that we're used to. So, classes are marked by granularity. That means that they divide up the corresponding domain into whole units or members. In this respect, classes are distinguished from wholes or sums. So the sum of human beings includes all the cells and molecules existing inside human beings as parts. The class of human beings is instantiated only by whole human beings, not by fingernails. So classes are granular. Sums go all the way down to the tiniest parts. Sets are also granular, but again, sets are distinct from classes. Sets are abstract entities outside time and space. So the set of human beings existing at T is timelessly a different entity from the set of human beings existing at T prime, because human beings die. But the class of human beings is the same. And then there are various other differences between classes and sets. So there are very many sets, including arbitrary sets defined in any way you like, just by listing entities at random. Classes are constrained by the world. Sets are constrained by nothing at all. And then conclusion. So the analog of pure mathematics to biomedical informatics is going to include, at least in part, a formal theory of biomedical classification. And this is going to look very different from standard mathematical set theory. And I think, although this is a long story, that we need a warning here about description logic. But the formal theory of biological classification is still in its infancy. And that's the end. Thank you very much. This means that we now have 8 minutes. Yes?
So, I'll say first that I'm on your side. I use the FMA, I think it's a wonderful thing. And I like this kind of work. I want to pick, however, on one particular point that concerns me about multiple comparisons. And this you might allude to one of your opening remarks about perhaps biomedical clarity is different. So I'm concerned about integrating ontologies about very fast changing knowledge. And many times the objects I might want to classify, we just don't know what their kind is, what their differentiation is.
Yeah.
We just have some phenomenon we measure somewhere.
Yeah.
And we need to name it, and we need to talk about it, and we need to integrate it. And those situations, multiple comparisons, I find very useful.
Okay, actually in Leipzig we're developing a tool to deal with that sort of case, which does not involve compromising in the way that you suggest. And I think Jonathan is going to be talking a little bit about that in the next session. So the idea, roughly speaking, is this. A classification imposes a partition on reality. So it might be a partition of chemicals into their functions, or a partition of body parts according to structure. And you can think of a partition as being like a window. And if you look through a window, some of the items that you can see will be items that you can associate names with. So tree or... And then there might be other items which are hidden in the fog. Or there might be other items that you can't see at all because they're occluded. Now, that means that you need to have an understanding of partitions which includes both the stuff that you are in a position to classify and also what you might think of as empty space, which is waiting to be classified, but which is still projecting onto reality. And we have the tools for dealing with that sort of case. And also tools for understanding how the empty space gradually gets populated. So, Yes. I think this is a similar question to the one we just had. So it's not merely the case that medical reality is such that our knowledge of it is rapidly evolving. It's also the case that we very often are dealing with the very same phenomenon from quite separate perspectives, from the phenotypic perspective, from the anatomical perspective, from the protein pathway perspective. And we have different partitions, therefore, of the same phenomenon. And we need to be able to use those different partitions in such a way that we know that they are the same partitions of the same phenomenon. So we need to be able to project through different partitions. And this, the tool I just described is that's precisely what it's for. Yes?
Yes, about multiple inheritance, perhaps in anatomy it's maybe part of the physical to avoid multi hierarchy. But imagine we have the classification of diseases, which is indeed a mono hierarchy, but there are a lot of problems and more or less arbitrary assignments, for instance, that meningitis, it is both a neurologic disease and infectious disease. And by convention, it is put into the class of infectious. But it could be also in the other class. And there are other examples, and even the ICD used some tricks, for instance, the dagger asterisk marks in order to overcome the limitations imposed by monohierarchy.
Yes. All right,
do you really think that it's possible to describe a pathology, to describe a domain, only
whenever I've been confronted with an example where it was claimed that multiple inheritance was necessary, I've always been able to talk my own way out of it and find for my purposes, much more satisfactory single inheritance representation. So meningitis, it's clear that that's a neurological disease, and that the fact that it's infectious is not a special, that is not describing a special kind of disease. Is describing some feature of this disease, which is, namely, it's infectious. That seems to me to be perfectly intuitive. Now, as soon as I'm defeated, then I'll gladly climb under the table. But so far, I haven't found convincing examples. And everywhere in Go, where I've checked, where Go uses multiple inheritance, not only have I found that there was a way of eliminating the multiple inheritance, but also in 80% of the cases, there were also errors. So multiple inheritance in Go is the best clue there is for errors in Go. Yes?
Can you comment on
Well, I said that description logic was a long story, and I only have 2 minutes. And I also understand that Protégé is going through a radical overhaul as we speak. Now, Protégé, the things that I have been talking about today have been content, not the framework for building an ontology. And I do not have evidence that Protégé is a bad framework for building ontologies. How's that? So, one last remark. Yes?
Say it kindly, I'm a novice here. You've been mentally questioning a little bit. For my standpoint as a practicing physician, trying to understand ontologies, if you have been able to always talk your way out of a bad ontology, or a system that splits and brings together, simply said, why weren't you able to develop a good one?
Well, I've only been doing this. I've only been involved in this activity for some months, so I'm not quite all alone, but...
What is the problem then? If in theory, is it doable? Why
yes.
Isn't there a good one?
Well, the foundational model of anatomy is a good one. So it is doable. And I have a quite serious effort underway to redo the UMLS semantic network and also to redo Go, both of which are, by these standards, relatively small enterprises. So Go is only 20,000 terms. To redo the whole of SNOMED, that will probably defeat me. Okay, Jonathan, Mariana?
I suppose I'll plug this thing in. Why don't you introduce yourself while I'm making this work?
I'm Mariana from Language and Computing. This is Jonathan from IFOMIS. And we organized a combined talk here, which is mainly to talk about the collaboration we've been doing for the past year. And Barry talks a little bit about their interests on this collaboration. While this goes on, talk a little bit about ours. Language Computing is a company that develops natural language processing applications, and our applications are based on the medical domain ontology called the LinkBase. And our goal with this collaboration is actually to improve the LinkBase and to formalize and to take the rigor and philosophy and the theory in order to improve our ontology and in consequently to improve the applications. And the work we've been doing is for a year, not a lot of time, but we've reached already some results that we're going to share now here. And we were also able to bring different problems that you get when you combine an application ontology, like the LinkBase, with the formalism, like the problem of multiple inheritance that you guys mentioned already, for example. So. So just an overview, I'm going to start introducing the LinkBase, showing more or less how is its structure and how it works. Then Jonathan will talk about a little bit about Buffo, the theory and the philosophical ground that we're going to be talking about later on the about the collaboration. He's going to talk about some problems that you encounter on building domain ontologies and on aligning them, on integrating domain ontologies, and the solutions with formal ontology that we found so far for these problems. I'll talk then a little bit about subsumption, how the formal ontology helps us to apply correct subsumption, and how you can get problems if you try to subsume without this formal ontology. And then I'll go on to the axiomatization. So we're actually trying to apply the axioms of Buffo to the LinkBase, and I'll talk about a little bit about this process. And Jonathan will conclude our talk. Our technology at Language and Computing is structured pretty much this way. We have the Link Factory, which is our ontology editor and browser, that serves as to give the structure to our data, the structure that we need for natural language processing, and also serves as a function library. So it's a system that's very scalable and very performant, and in that sense it serves all our purposes. And we use that to manage the LinkBase, so our medical domain ontology that I'll talk more about it further. And based on the LinkBase, then we have our application components, so the natural language processing enabling tools, and they run mainly all based on the LinkBase. So the LinkBase is designed to support this natural language processing applications and also to integrate different vocabularies and different ontologies and terminologies in the medical domain. So it enables cross-mapping between these different classifications and terminologies like ICDs, SNOMED, MESH, and so forth. Ontology-wise, we can call it the world's largest nowadays. We have about more than 2 million concepts and more than 5,300,000 links, so semantic relations between these concepts. And we also say the LinkBase is language independent. And what we mean by that is that, okay, our ontology elements, like concepts, links, and criteria, they are not bound to any language, but we do have a large lexicon and terms, about 3,500,000 terms linked in various languages to this ontological element. So this is the basic structure of our link base. Centrally, we have the formal domain ontology, actually, that's enhanced by the lexicon, so the terms in the different languages, and by what we call the Cassandra linguistic ontology. And the linguistic ontology, that's to serve the natural language processing purpose, and this division representing the point of view that we take on the entities in our ontology. So, and it allows us, it's our elements that allow us to look at these elements from a linguistic point of view, and it's inspired and based on the generalized upper model. So you see, for example, you can have a perspective, linguistic perspective on the process according to their configuration, the configuration that they have in language, and also on the participants on this process. So we divide, for example, in communicative processing, this, like, you know, transferring a message, and you have there the participant sayer, the one that says, saying whatever it said, or else like material processes, like actually physical process, and you have different participants from the linguistic point of view, actor, the one that does, instrument, whatever it's used to be done. Then, externally to our formal domain ontology, we have the proprietary terminologies or ontologies, and we don't actually place them inside our domain ontology, but they are placed outside and mapped to the elements on our ontology. So the external elements are mapped to the elements in our ontology, and like that we don't compromise the form of our domain ontology to any specific structure of the terminologies outside, and like, and we can still provide a cross mapping between them. So it happens pretty much like that. We have there, for example, neoplasm, it's up there, a concept or an entity in our domain ontology that's mapped to, for example, Madra neoplasm, SNOMED neoplasm. And on the other hand, the elements on the external terminologies you see here is the SNOMED hierarchy, the Madra hierarchy, map back to our domain ontology. Like that you get a triangular relation you can map from one to the other. So again, this is our structure. We have the realist ontology, the concept systems are externally, the terms, and the buffer and meadow are there to actually validate our realist ontology, the medical linguistic ontology, as well as the mappings that we do from the external systems to the realist ontology. And that's something I'll get back to what Barry was talking about, the partitions. That's like, how is it different? What's the view different that we take on the ontology than, you know, other vocabularies or terminologies do? It's actually the way of looking into the technology, the way of looking into the elements in the ontology and on reality. So we follow the theory of granular partitions of Barry Smith, and that's okay. Some slides to illustrate what he already said. Like, you should think of Alberti's grid. So it's a grid. Alberti used the grid to divide reality into different parts, into different pieces. So the grid itself is not the reality, it's just a way of looking into it. It's a way of, you know, cutting the word at the joint. So an ontology is a partition of reality, or it can be also a combination of different partitions. A partition cuts the word in a certain way, and, you know, the case of multiple inheritance, that can be many different partitions on the same reality. So how, so well, you can see, for example, the state of Maryland can be divided into, can be seen through different partitions. You have the partition of the voting zones, the partition of judicial districts, the partition of physiographic provinces, the partition of counties. It's all different views on the same reality. Okay, how do we apply that in link base? You see there, for example, the modeling of meningitis, same example. You have indeed a multiple inheritance, is an inflammation, is the disorder of meninges, and also a link to meninges. Okay, this all this relationship is going to define different partition, different views on meningitis. So that's what Barry was saying, you should be able to cut across all the partitions to get to that element. So if you relate to the meningitis, to the meninges, there you're looking from the perspective of the body site, the anatomical partition. If you say that is a disorder of meninges, you're looking at that partition that classifies the disorders by body site. So I say, okay, I have a disease of the body, and the disease of the central nervous system is a disease of the body, and this disease of the meninges is of the central body system. You is a partition perspective of classifying diseases by body site. When you look at another partition is, you know, classify inflammation then by body site. So there are different views on the same thing. So indeed, within one same partition, meningitis could not belong to any other entity within that is the disorder partition. When it belongs to another, when you do have multiple inheritance, when it belongs somewhere else, it means that you know, you apply a perspective on a different partition. So how do we view the elements in our ontology according to this theory? So our domain entities, so for the ones who know our concepts between brackets, domain entities, they represent the cells of the different partitions, so the way to look into reality from different partitions. The meta entities, so the elements from the external terminologies, they are cells of a partition prepared by third parties. So within that classification, ICD-10, for example, meningitis, that's a cell. The domain entity link, it's actually the aspect of a domain entity that, you know, drives you to a partition or another. So if I say meningitis, I use the link has systemic medium, it means I'm, you know, driving to the anatomical partition. And a criteria is, yeah, pretty much the consequence of that, the perspective of that domain entity given that partition. Okay, now Jonathan's going to give a bit of purple.
Let me say first, in response to Mariana's last comment, that the terminology that she is talking about, cells, is something that we're developing a formal logic of in Leipzig. What you should think of is the cells in the grid of Alberti. And each one of these cells in that grid picks out a specific part of reality. And when she's talking about the cell that represents a certain part of reality, that's the idea. Anyway, now I'm going to develop some of the distinctions that Barry mentioned earlier in the context of the basic formal ontology of IFOMIS. And then I'll show you some ways in which we've been able to use these distinctions to solve problems in the link-based ontology. So first, we have four categories of basic formal ontology, categories that exist in every domain of being, categories of substances, states, powers, and functions. Now, there's an important kind of relationship that some of these things, substances, stand into others, states, powers, and functions. This is the relationship of strict dependence, which we're going to represent formally later as ODP. Ontological dependence. A strictly depends on B whenever A cannot exist unless B does. So some examples are the way that John's headache depends on John, Mary's smile depends on Mary, Peter's power of performing weddings depends on Peter, and the beating function of Sarah's heart depends on Sarah's heart. You couldn't have a headache if you didn't exist. Headaches can't just float free in the universe. Likewise with smiles, that's why the Cheshire Cat story is funny, because it's not true. There's another kind of dependence relation which is a bit easier and more natural, called generic dependence. This is the relation that you stand into a class of things rather than a particular thing. So I have to have a temperature, but I don't have to have a temperature of 98.6 degrees, although it would be nice. So I have to have some temperature, but there's no specific temperature that I need to have in order to continue existing. And we have a similar relation, which will be important later, called weak foundation. A is weakly founded on B whenever A strictly depends on B, as well as all the parts of B. A substance is an entity which is not strictly dependent on anything. So X is a substance if and only if there is nothing on which X strictly depends. But a substance can generically depend on lots of things. I'm a substance, and I depend on having some temperature, but no particular temperature. So these other categories, states, like the state of being happy, the state of having a headache, or the state of having a temperature of 98.6 degrees, powers like the power to wed people, functions like the function of pumping blood. These things are not substances because, as we saw, these things depend on some bearer, the thing that has the function, that has the power, that has the quality. And they depend strictly on these bearers. The terminology we use for the relationship between these things and their bearers is inherence. We say that substances, powers, and functions inhere on the substances, states, powers, and functions inhere on the substances that bear them. Thus it follows that if X inheres on Y, then X strictly depends on Y. The other distinction Barry mentioned was the distinction between continuance and occurrence in another philosophical terminology, that's endurance and perdurance. Some things persist differently through times than others. They're on the one hand objects like tables, chairs, countries, and people. These entities endure through time. This means that they don't have temporal parts, but rather they're wholly present at every moment at which they exist. I existed 5 minutes ago. I exist now. I hope I will exist 5 minutes from now. But at each of those times, there will be the same thing there, me. And that thing then, me, was the same as this thing now, me, and will be the same as that thing later, me. This is in contrast to things like brain surgeries, heart attacks, and lives. These things perdure through time, by which we mean that they do have temporal parts, such as the first half of the surgery, the last phase of the heart attack, and one's childhood. The first part of the surgery, the part of the surgery that took place 5 minutes ago, is a different thing than the part of the surgery that's going on right now. The surgery is not endure through time, it perdures. So some terminology. We call the things that endure endurance and symbolize it by ENDX. We call perduring processual entities perdurants and symbolize them as you can see. No endurant is a perdurant and no perdurant is an endurant. These are very important distinctions between kinds of things and there's no overlap. How do we relate endurance and perdurance? The most important relationships between endurance and perdurance are the relationships of participation and realization. Perdurance strictly depend on endurance, which is where it starts. And here's the relation of participation. This is a relationship we're all quite familiar with. A surgeon operates, a heart beats, lungs inhale. By PP, I mean participation. The surgeon participates in the surgery. The heart participates in beating processes, hopefully, and the lungs hopefully participate in respiratory processes. Now, realization is a bit less familiar, but actually quite common, and we know it from everyday experience. Powers and functions may be unrealized. A stopped heart is not realizing its function of pumping blood, but it still has that function. The function of the heart to pump blood still is present, even if the heart is failing. So the heart of a tachycardic is not fulfilling the function of beating at a proper rate, but it still has that function. This computer is not fulfilling its function of displaying my report, but it still has that function, and that's why I'm mad. Have we lost power?
I think we did lose power.
Oh, my.
It usually would give a warning. Is there a computer in
there? No, I think it's the...
So let's continue talking, John.
Right. The...
Is that the
So it will come back to life. Yeah. Just talk.
So this is the way that we relate certain processes, like the process of the heart's beating or the process of this computer working. Well, that's a bad example because you can't talk about processes that don't exist. This is that absence problem that Barry was mentioning earlier. But we can say about something like my heart beating. My heart is beating right now. And that current process of my heart's beating is a process which is realizing the function that my heart has to beat. But these two things are distinct. Likewise, if Peter were marrying someone right now, then he would be realizing his power to marry people, but he doesn't have to.
Keep talking, I'll do this.
I believe, okay. Next, I'm going to talk a bit about myriology. These are the simple relationships of parthood, wholehood, that we are also quite familiar with from day-to-day life. My hand is a part of me. This computer is a part of the sum total of things in this room and the sum total of things I would like to smash. And likewise, Barry is not a part of me, I am not a part of Barry. There are some simple axioms for the parthood relation which come in very handy when we're trying to model these things.
That'll do.
And you'll see them soon enough.
Thank you.
Good.
Say thank you.
Thank you. So proper parthood, which is this basic relation of one thing is a part of the other but not the same as it, nothing is a proper part of itself. If X is a proper part of Y, then Y is not a proper part of X. And if my foot is a part of my leg, and my leg is a part of me, then my foot is a part of me. Generalized parthood is just proper parthood or identity. Parthood looks like that. Now finally, I can show you the overall tree picture of the basic formal ontology that we're developing in IFOMIS. It's divided into two parts, a snap part and a span part. This is the snap part. We take everything that's a continuant or an endurant, and then we go down from there. We divide into dependent entities and independent entities, as Barry mentioned. And among the dependent entities, as you can see, are powers, functions, qualities, roles. Among the substantial entities are substances themselves and other derivative substance-like things, which I won't go into here. We also have other categories, which are important, but not for present purposes. On the other hand, we have the span, basic formal ontology, and this is the ontology of processes. And we divide things here into straightforward processual entities, like the events and the surgeries and the lives and the heart attacks that we know well. And also we have regions of space-time, and we have settings, which are, again, a technical matter, which do help link-based, but I can't tell you why today. So finally, I can show you a few ways in which we've used these distinctions to help link-base make more sense. Now, link-base, as Mariana showed you, incorporates many external terminologies. In a sense, link-base's job is to integrate all these terminologies, and the success of link-base is evidence to the fact that such integration can be achieved. Our dream is that all the SNOMED concepts and all the UMLS concepts can play together in link-base. So something we often face in link-base is you have an external concept and we need to know what concept in link-base to map it to. Now the problem is there are a lot of homonyms in medical vocabulary. An example of a homonym is dilatation. Dilatation can mean either the structure of a body part, and it can also denote the process that you do in a surgery of dilating something. Now, these two uses of the word are quite different and map to different sets of synonyms, but the only way that we can really understand a priori how to distinguish them is by understanding that one use of the word denotes an endurant and the other denotes a purgerent. So it was on this basis that link-base was able to identify that we have a homonym with two distinct meanings rather than just one concept, which would have led to all sorts of error. A similar example is transposition, where a transposition can be a name of a structure in your body. A certain organ can be transposed, which means you were born with a kind of defect sometimes, or a transposition can be the kind of procedure in a surgery where a surgeon transposes something. And again, it was only because we have this distinction embedded into a kind of standardized substructure, superstructure, which I'll tell you about later, that we were able to make this distinction that this is a homonym and denotes two separate concepts. So here's where mereological scrutiny comes into play. We have concepts like surgical amputation involving the foot. Now it's unclear, given such a concept, where it should map, because on the one hand, we think of things like surgical amputation involving a gangrenous foot, or surgical amputation involving a cold foot, and on the other hand, things like surgical amputation of a toe, or surgical amputation of an ankle. And these are separate families of concepts, because it may be that surgical amputation involving the foot is the parent only of more specific kinds of amputations of particular kinds of feet, or on the other hand, we may be talking about amputations of mereological parts of the feet. Now, it's only by being aware of how and when mereology, that is the theory of parts and wholes, comes into play, that we can make the kinds of distinctions between those two concepts and understand that they play different roles. Linkbase is able to integrate this concept in two separate ways. We integrate this one, surgical amputation involving the foot, as something which does have surgical amputation of the toe as a child, but we recognize the other concept as well. Lastly, the distinction between a function and its realization is a very important one, which is often overlooked. Attempting a way to model the relationship of an object to its function is by you, in some sense, you equate the function with simple activities that that thing performs. Now, as Barry was talking about earlier, the way you understand a representation like this is we're talking about a class. We're talking about a class of liver activities. We're not talking about possible liver activities. We're not talking about ideal conceptual liver activities. We're talking about the sum total of actual processes that actual livers have performed. So suppose the typical way you do this is you'd say that there's some link in addition to is actor of, because of course livers are actors of liver activities, which just means that livers participate in the processes of their own activity. You would introduce a link that fits in the same slot, which would be called has function. You'd say liver has functioned liver activity. Typically, a liver activity would be processing poison in the liver, and then it would look nice because we'd say that the liver has the function processing poison. But the trouble is that an aberrant liver is a kind of liver. And since is a link subsume according to that pattern, we'd be forced to admit that aberrant livers are actors of liver activity, even when aberrant livers are just the things that are failing to perform those activities. The point is that we want to be able to say that aberrant livers have the function of processing poisons, but they may fail at realizing those functions. So we don't want to have to say that aberrant livers are actors of liver activities, because they're precisely the kinds of livers that aren't. So a more nuanced modeling allows that there's a distinction between functions, so they're their own kind of entity, and liver activities. Liver, just like aberrant livers, have functions of, say, the function of processing poisons in the liver. But the actual class of liver activities doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that. Well, it has a lot to do with it, but it doesn't have the identity relation to do with it. Liver activities realize liver functions. And we're therefore not forced to say that aberrant livers are actors of liver activities. And this is the way that Linkbase recognizes that distinction. You can see that Linkbase has a concept for liver function, and then a concept for liver activity. And then we were unable to get all the pictures into the right slide, but they have the realization links. Oh, they're over here, right. So here you can see the relevant links. Okay, my last bit. So there's a need for a systematic top level, as we've been discussing. Linkbase currently features reasoning capabilities. They're rather limited. It lacks the sort of coherent underlying structure which is necessary for more sophisticated applications. So we want a more systematic top level, a top level which in some sense uses all the advantages of formal logic. So what does Linkbase say about the world? What is the structure of Linkbase as it stands? How easy would it be to instill a formal logical superstructure onto the ontology as it stands? So we know that if a real-world entity is an instance of a link-based concept or cell or domain entity, all that is said about the domain entity applies to the instance. And we know that the statement A link B says something about all instances of A, but nothing about instances of B, unless the link is declared to have an inverse. Mariana will explain more about that later. So to each concept and link, we already have a space for definitions and characterization, but it's specified informally. It's not relevant to current applications, and there are no standards governing definitions of links or concepts. So there's no methodologically stable way of telling all of the people who are putting new concepts in to follow these formal guidelines. We can just say, you know, do it sort of like this and hope things come out okay. And it usually does, but not always. There's no systematic uniformity to how we understand these things. And consequently, the overall information content of the system is lower than it could be. There's a lot of things we could use and exploit that we're not able to as things stand. So what we want to do is define such a standard protocol for definitions of concepts and links, ideally in the formal language of BUFO that Barry, I, and others are working on in Leipzig. It's kind of a repair the ship at sea project. It's interesting for us as philosophers to see how the demands of the system affect the kind of logic we're going to develop as much as we use our logic to shape the way they make future modeling decisions. In any case, an extra level of structure and coherent information will allow for the automation of processes that are currently run by hand. Mariana will discuss some ways in which this imposition of structure has allowed already for link-based to infer certain flaws in their taxonomy, infer links that unite categories that are missing, existing links that are misclassified, and so on. That will be the remainder of the talk. In any case, the proposed reading is simply this. If we have concept A link concept B, we read it as, for all A in the class associated with concept A, there is a B in the class associated with concept B, such that A stands in formal relation R to concept B. And R is going to be a relation in our formal language, and that's where the advantages of that language and what we as philosophers and logicians know about first-order logic becomes helpful. For all you logicians in the room, here's the technical way of representing what I've just said. It's a pi 2 formula, which just means that it goes, for all x, there is a y. So if you had infinitely many things, you'd have to do a lot of searching before you could be sure you'd found a match. An example is just something like liver activity has actor liver, and this just means that for every actual particular process of liver activity, A, there is some liver, B, such that B is the actor of A. And here I can show you a problem that we were able to solve, a multiple inheritance problem, by thinking in terms of the desire to impose this formal structure onto our system. The idea is that in general, if you're given a concept like laryngotomy with removal of tumor, and you want to embed that into your system, but you don't have any deeper structure or understanding of what the concept means, you're just going with what the words say, the most likely modeling decision you're going to make is you're going to give it a multiple inheritance treatment like this. You're going to say, well, these four things are the full definition of this concept. It's an incision. It's also an excision. It's an excision of a tumor. It's an incision of the larynx. It's got the tumor and the larynx as a participant. Well, that means you're going to subsume it as a tumor excision as well as an incision of the larynx. Seems to make sense, right? But the problem is that the only kind of concepts you can find that fully define a laryngectomy, a removal of the larynx, are that it's an excision and it has a participant larynx. This means that you're going to subsume laryngotomy with removal of the tumor under laryngectomy, which is a mistake, because cutting open the larynx to remove a tumor is not the same as removing the larynx. How do we solve this? Well, the point is that we come to installing new concepts into the system with an a priori understanding of what the logical structure of those concepts are. We're not a slave to the way the words on the name of the concept are set up. We can understand something deeper about the logical nature of the relation in question. So in this case, we ignore the removal of tumor aspect to some extent. We say this is first and foremost a laryngotomy, and it stands in an has inclusion relation to the removal of tumor. But there are other concepts which will focus on the removal of tumor part of this kind of procedure. This concept, we're looking at it under an aspect of being a laryngotomy first and foremost. And that's why we can say that we're only interested in the fact that it's an incision of the larynx and has inclusive tumor excision as its full definition. And this enables us to avoid that problem. Okay, I'm going to give you back to Mariana now.
Okay, so I'm going to start talking about subsumption and how we've been applying it based on this background that Jonathan just overlapped to you, and how you can apply it correctly and how you can apply it incorrectly. So we introduced the notion to our entities of full definition. And if you know something that another real-world entity, an instance, or another concept or entity in your ontology satisfies the full definition, so all the conditions specified in that full definition, then you may infer that that object is an instance of this entity of yours. So either another concept in your ontology or an instance in the real world in text. So, and also for this, something that we also apply is the notion of inheritance, inherited criteria. So everything that is true for an entity is true for every entity that subsumes. So this is whatever Jonathan already said. If you say something is true for that entity, it's true for all the instances of it. So at the moment that we apply the subsumption, we take into account not only the relationships we give by the modeling of that concept, but all the relationships that are taken from all its ancestors all the way up to the hierarchy, and like that you expand your possibilities, of course. Where does the formalism help us? It's by our understanding of these full definitions. Okay, you can select A set of criteria, you can select B set of criteria for your full definition, and depending of your thoughts at that moment, you're going to have good results or bad results. So for us, a full definition is a necessary and sufficient criteria. And what I mean by necessary is like everything that you definitely need in order to subsume something there. If you have something less than that, you're going to fall into errors. If you're not specific enough, you're going to fall into errors.